Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be those of Chris Pinto, who's a film producer, has put together some wonderful films, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, the second in that series, was Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and then the next one that's coming up is The Eye of the Phoenix, and you certainly want to see that. In fact, you can see the trailer up there on the internet, The Eye of the Phoenix. Just Google in Chris Pinto, P-I-N-T-O, and Eye of the Phoenix, and I can hardly wait till that one comes out. Now, they have another great DVD they just put out on Kinsey, the Kinsey story, which goes into the occult background of Kinsey and the terrible, terrible things he did to destroy the moral fabric of our society. Before we get into a discussion with Chris, I just wanted to comment on the debates we saw this evening between Governor Palin and Senator Biden. And what you have to understand, it was very entertaining. And I thought Governor Palin did very well. But they're not talking about the issues. The real issue is that, of course, John McCain comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. Senator Biden was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Both Obama and McCain have written articles for the Council on Foreign Relations magazine, Foreign Affairs. Both men have appeared and attended at their meetings of the Council on Foreign Relations. And the Council on Foreign Relations is dedicated to globalism. That subject wasn't brought up tonight. Did you notice that nothing was said about immigration? Why? Because, of course, both candidates and both political parties support free immigration into this country. Nobody talked about English being the language of this country. Why? Because they're both globalists. They want, of course, a multicultural society and to do away with national sovereignty. Certainly, they argue back and forth on the war, but, of course, both of them want to continue the war in Afghanistan, and Senator Obama says he'll have our troops home in 16 months, and McCain says they'll be there longer, but they'll do exactly what they're told by the people who control them, because, you see, the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for a secret society that was formed well over 100 years ago. In 1891, it was formed by Cecil Rhodes. And, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations is a front for that secret society. And the fact that nobody will tell you that is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Every 4 years, we go to the polls to throw the rascals out, but nothing changes. It's all showbiz. And when you understand that, why, of course, you can think much more effectively of what's going on. We have a one-party system with two branches, and with that as the background, let's get to our good friend Chris Pinto. How are we doing, Chris?
Oh, pretty good, Dr. Stan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine. And what would you like to talk about tonight? Would you like to talk about the world, occult movement? Would you like to talk about Kinsey? What would you like to talk about?
Oh, sure. You know, we could talk about Eye of the Phoenix.
Now, well, let's talk about Eye of the Phoenix, because I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting it all finally edited together. We've been doing the filming for it through the summer and have finished our reenactments and our interviews, and I've started the editing process.
All right. Now, what is the basic theme of The Eye of the Phoenix?
Well, it deals with the secrets of the dollar bill. We use that as the backdrop.
And, of course, the thing is that you're never going to hear this discussed by any of the presidential candidates because they're all part of this same secret movement that can be traced back to the origins of the occult emblem on the back of the dollar bill. And, of course, the little owl that they have hidden there on the dollar bill, which most people have never seen. We'll be right back with Chris Pinto. Well, Chris, you go right ahead and pick that up.
Well, we've been, I of the Phoenix is, of course, the third part in the Secret Mysteries series. And we initially intended this to be a four- or five-part series. We're just taking them one step at a time. And with Eye of the Phoenix, we're bringing the whole history of America into the 20th century and talking a lot more about the unfolding of this New World Order plan and how it got a huge boost through FDR and his administration and his association with Henry Wallace, who was his Secretary of Agriculture initially, became his Vice President at one point. And both Henry Wallace and FDR were high-ranking Freemasons. And the Freemasons, even today, on their website, even though when I interviewed Dr. Brent Morris 2 years ago for Riddles and Stone, Part 2, when I was interviewing him, he had a lot of, I interviewed him at the House of the Temple there in Washington, D.C. And he is noted for, in his books, his essays, and so on, for playing sort of word games around the symbols on the back of the dollar bill, saying that they're not really Masonic symbols and so on. And what he means by that, he'll say, well, these are symbols that the Masons use, but they're not necessarily Masonic. And then, of course, you go inside the House of the Temple and you find these all-seeing eyes with, you know, rays of light blasting out of them and all this other kind of thing. And you realize they're, you know, he's playing word games with you. But when I interviewed him, I asked him specifically about FDR, because they have on their website, on the Scottish Rite website for the House of the Temple, they've got the account of Henry Wallace and how he had uncovered the seals. He'd uncovered the Great Seal, had seen it, acknowledged it as a Masonic symbol, and took it to FDR, who was also a Freemason. And FDR saw it as a Masonic symbol, and together they chose to put this on America's $1 bill. Now, I asked Brent Morris directly about this. I said, did FDR really believe that these were Masonic symbols? And is that why he put them on the dollar bill? And he acknowledged in the affirmative. He said, yeah, of course he did. You know, but then he just argues that FDR was mistaken. You know, and my argument is, well, who's more influential? You know, the Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America, or, you know, the editor for the Scottish Rite Journal? And that's an interesting question, but I'm inclined to believe that the Commander-in-Chief would have a lot more influence.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Chris, our guest this evening is Chris Petto. He's talking about his latest production in the Secret Mystery series. It's the third one. It's The Eye of the Phoenix. And you could actually see the trailer for this up on the Internet. I wish I could tell you we had it. It was available, but it's not. Somebody living over in Ireland had said, you've got to see this trailer because you're in it. And so I thought, well, gee, if I'm in it, I really ought to see it. And so I Googled in Chris Pinto and Eye of the Phoenix, and sure enough, he comes up, and sure enough, I'm in it. It's some old footage they'd shot with me, but Chris does a wonderful job of piecing this all together. Now, Chris was just talking about an interview he'd done with one of the leaders of the modern-day Scottish Rite movement, the Masonic movement, the editor of their magazine, talking about the emblem on the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid, kept by the all-seeing eye, the glorified all-seeing eye. And is it Mr. Morris? Is it Brent Morris?
Yeah, Dr. Brent Morris.
Dr. Brent Morris, of course, makes a point, and it's a very interesting point. He says that the Masons use the emblem, but it's not a Masonic emblem. Chris, you know, in some ways, he's telling the truth. This is an emblem of the ancient mystery religions that has been passed down for 5,000 years. That's what Professor Quigley says in the interview that we offer with him. The emblem, on the back of the dollar bills, has been around for, he says, 6,000 years. Maybe it's been 6,000, 5,000. You know, I'm not going to argue over the length of time, but it was the emblem of the ancient mystery religions and the ancient secret societies that, of course, course, was then picked up by the Templars and picked up by the Rosicrucians and then picked up by the Masons. So it is a Masonic symbol because they use it. But Masonry is a manifestation of the ancient mystery religions and of the Gnostic beliefs. I'm sure you've gone into this whole thing.
Oh, sure. And I mean, it would be, Dr. Stan, I think it would be like saying that the eagle is not an American symbol.
Right.
Simply because other people use the eagle as a symbol, and so it's not, of course it's an American symbol. It might also be an Iraqi symbol and a Nazi symbol and so on, but obviously the American eagle is an American symbol.
And the triangle, the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill, is a Masonic symbol, which they use, which of course, to proclaim their allegiance to these ancient ideas. Of course, they are part and parcel of this movement that's been around for thousands of years. Although I doubt that the average Mason knows this, obviously Dr. Brent Morris is well aware of what this is all about, so he can play the word games. And, of course, say it's not a Masonic emblem, and yet, of course, they use the Masonic emblem. And, of course, it did not originate with Masonry, but then, of course, Masonry didn't originate as its present form until, what, about 1711, was it?
Well, you know, that's an interesting history. Because there are some who argue that the Freemasonry in the time of Washington and the American Revolution, here in America anyway, underwent a radical change after the American Revolution. And I think you would agree that it was largely because of the influence of the Bavarian Illuminati that had infiltrated France and the Jacobin movement, and then they had come to America. And in fact, according to Buff Perry, who's he's a professional cipher and a Canadian. We interview him in part one and part two. According to the research that Buff has done on the Skull and Bone Society, the purpose for the founding of the Skull and Bone Society in 1832 or 33, right around there.
1832.
That the purpose for founding that society by William Huntington Russell was to reunite American Masonry and whatever other arcane groups there were with the ideas of European Masonry. And these, you know, radical ideas of world revolution and basically the whole New World Order plan. According to Buff, he believes that that's what, because Skull and Bones originated out of Germany, and William Huntington Russell was a part of a group there, was exposed to one, and wanted to start an American chapter called the Skull, S-C-U-L-L, initially, and that evolved into Skull and Bones. But it seems that he brought with him that very radical, bloodthirsty, you know, French revolutionary version of Masonry, and that that's what Skull and Bones was about, and that their intent was to sort of recapture American Masonry, which had been separated from European Masonry by the Revolutionary War. At least that's an interpretation of how the events may have unfolded. But, I mean, admittedly, there's a certain amount of speculation. But I think the concepts of Masonry, the ancient mystery concepts, you know, the all-seeing eye and the pyramid and embracing, you know, the Greco-Roman, Egyptian, and Babylonian symbols as just being the different archetypes of God, certainly that is something that's condemned by the Christian faith, condemned by the Bible. One of the things that I like to make reference to is the early Americans, you know, William Bradford, who came over on the Mayflower and was the chief governor of the Plymouth Colony. If you read his history of the Plymouth Plantation, he talks about how they had a neighboring colony that set up a maypole. Okay, and they were drinking and dancing about it, and they objected to this maypole and ended up cutting it down. And he's talking there about how they had anew revived the ceremonies of the Bacchanalia, those who worship Bacchus. And so they had an awareness of these pagan practices, a detailed awareness of it, and they would have had nothing to do with it. And so it seems unlikely that the founders of at the American Revolution, those who were part of the committee to develop the Great Seal and so on, that they would have been unaware of the pagan implications of these symbols. They would have certainly had an education about it, but for whatever reason, chose to embrace them anyway.
Well, I think initially, of course, it was Adams, it was Jefferson, it was Franklin who are on the committee to create the Great Seal. And if you've ever seen the initial Great Seal, and I know you have, part of that initial Great Seal has got a couple of people on it, and I've forgotten all the details, but up at the very top is the triangle with the glorified eye that, of course, sits atop the Great Pyramid on the back of our dollar bill and on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. So certainly both Franklin and Jefferson knew about the mysteries, were dedicated to the mysteries. I think that Jefferson, as time went by, began to move away from that. But at the time, and that was, 1782, as I remember, that they started working on that Great Seal, they wanted to include this emblem of the ancient mystery religions on the back of the Great Seal of the United States, and then eventually it evolved into what we have today. So, I mean, I think that they knew exactly its significance because at that time they understood these ancient mystery religions. In fact, we even have a copy of a book that was written, a set of books written, I think, in the 1840s by Washington Irving, where, of course, one of the French ambassador to the United States writes a letter to Thomas Jefferson, and he actually says, "You have introduced me to the mysteries, and now you've turned against me. I mean, you taught me that we should object to anybody have total power over the lives of people. Why have you betrayed me?" And of course, people read that and they say, "What's he talking about? The mysteries?" And nobody ever wants to address the fact that Jefferson was involved with these ideas, although eventually, of course, he turns against them.
Right. And now that's the letter from Citizen Genet, is it not?
Right, right. And actually, we have that. We have that even in French. My Dr. Dennis Cuddy, when I gave him the pages out of Washington Irving's 1840 book that covers that, written in English, Dr. Cuddy, not to be outdone, provided me with a copy in French, a copy of, I guess, of the original letter that was sent by Citizen Genet. For those of you who don't know, Dr. Dennis Cuddy is a very good friend, and we always have fun working together, but he always seems to come out on top with things like that. He's an amazing researcher.
Well, now, the interesting thing, Stan, that I've found with the research that I've done, is that even though, I mean, certainly Jefferson was, I mean, he was involved with the mysteries. I think that's provable beyond the shadow of a doubt when you go to Monticello, his home, and you go see his graveyard, and there you've got an obelisk that he designed for his tombstone. And it's an Egyptian-style obelisk, the great symbol of the mysteries themselves. But Jefferson approved of this radical Jacobin, that's that connection with Genet. Genet was the Jacobin ambassador, and he was a part of this whole Illuminati movement that was at work over in France. And these guys were bloodthirsty. I mean, these guys were mass murdering people left and right. And Jefferson has a quote that we include in Riddles and Stone where he says that it were better if every nation were reduced to but a mere Adam and Eve, then that the French Revolution should fail. And Jefferson caught a lot of heat, apparently, from his contemporaries for that comment and for his support of the revolutionaries, even though they were so bloodthirsty and on the verge of killing Louis and Marie Antoinette, which they eventually did. But before that, you had guys who, they supported the idea of freedom, guys like the Marquis de Lafayette, was over there supporting the idea of freedom, certainly, but trying to protect King Louis from being killed. But Washington, George Washington, while he was a Freemason, he did not support these Illuminati characters, and he did not support the French Revolution. And one of the letters that we bring up in Riddles is a letter from Adams to Jefferson, talking about how Genet had stirred up a crowd in Philadelphia that threatened to drag George Washington out of where he was staying and so on, to force him to support the French Revolution because he refused to do so. And so there was a division there. Even though they were, Washington was a Mason, Jefferson was into the mysteries, still, they didn't necessarily see eye to eye on some of these radical ideas.
But these are parts of history that are never taught in our colleges. You've got to do a lot of research to find it. We'll be back in just a moment with Chris Pinto. Well, they were already very complex individuals, and I certainly have a great deal of admiration for Jefferson. The whole idea as it was, the mysteries were presented at that time was...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
You will find that one of the degrees of masonry is just happens to be the level of the Rosy Cross, and that of course is one of the stages you have to go through in your evolution as a Mason to become a 32nd degree Mason. The Rosy Cross was Rosicrucian, and of course the Rosicrucians, remember, were the disciples of the Templars, were the disciples, you know, of the ancient mystery religions. And of course, they all tie together. But most people don't know that. Of course, Chris was just saying that Benjamin Franklin had taken a copy of the Declaration of Independence to a gentleman, I think his name was Peter Miller, who was a Rosicrucian, to let them know what the Declaration really was talking about. And what people don't understand is the Rosicrucians were sent to the United States in about 1640, somewhere in there, to actually take over control of our country so that one day America would become the new Atlantis, and would its military and financial power would be utilized to bring about this world government. Initially, of course, they were a very weak group, but today they are very powerful, and they work through many of the secret societies that exist, or covert societies, or these organizations who enlist in the Brotherhood of Darkness. But basically, of course, today, America has troops stationed in 130 nations. Well, 131, we learned last night that now we have troops stationed in Israel as well. So we have troops stationed in 131 nations. We have over 720 military bases throughout the world. We are still occupying both Germany and Japan and of course, South Korea, and half a century after the wars there ended. And it's all part of this move towards the American Empire, was what the Rosicrucians have been working for since at least 1640 when they arrived in this country. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh, I mean, I would agree, certainly. I mean, I think a key point, you know, that I was thinking about as you were talking is, you know, we talk about in Secret Mysteries 1 when we mention Sir Francis Bacon and his book, The New Atlantis. Well, the full title of Bacon's book was The New Atlantis, The Land of the Rosicrucians, Land of the Rosicrucians. And that was Bacon's outline, his vision for what he believed America was or would become in time. And of course, he's writing about this, a secret society, a secret order that's hidden away from the rest of the world. Which I think is very symbolic for Bacon, but it's a society that has all of these scientific advancements with tall buildings and flying machines and sound machines and weapons of mass destruction and all this kind of stuff. It's really very fascinating to go and read this book that was first published around 1626, shortly after Bacon's death. And all of the detailed things that he's describing, and I mean, down to scientific advancements, experiments on animals, you know, poisoning animals to find cures for human beings, something that we would see practiced in the 20th century. And it's because of these things that certain Baconian societies have called Francis Bacon the real founder of America. But with that comes the theology of Bacon, his philosophy, which is, you know, he's writing about these Christian sailors, but he's embroiling the reader in all of this pagan mysticism wrapped up with Jesus and the Gospels and so on. And that's what America's become. It's, you know, it's the theology of Bacon has really overwhelmed America, because certainly when the pilgrims came here, this was a Bible-believing Christian country and continued to be so for the first couple of hundred years. It's only been in through the 20th century that the Rosicrucian and Masonic ideas of embracing many gods as being one and the same, that has overtaken us, and that has really become the religion of America. That's the official state religion, even though nobody's going to come out and admit that. If you're going to be politically correct in our society today, you're going to confess the Rosicrucian belief system, which is that there are many paths to God, everybody has their own way of getting there, and they can all lead to heaven, etc., and so on, as long as you're a good person, and blah, blah, blah. But that's Rosicrucianism. That's Freemasonry. That's what they believe. It's not at all what the founders of our country believed.
And, of course, the big problem is we've gotten so far away from what the founders of America believed in, their ideas of a constitution that limited the power of government, that we were to be a republic, not a democracy. They abhorred the idea of democracy because they knew it would ultimately end up in a place similar to where we are today. They were men of great foresight who feared the tyranny of the central government. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Chris Pinto, who's done a wonderful job of getting together information in his DVDs, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, the Riddles in Stone, and of course there you'll actually see the pictures of the statue of Francis Bacon. Where was that? The Library of Congress? Why would they?
Yeah, inside Library of Congress.
Why would they have a statue of Francis Bacon, who was a Rosicrucian, the leader of the Rosicrucian movement, in the Library of Congress?
Well, it's not just in the Library of Congress, Dan, but they've got Bacon's phrase, which one of his famous phrases is "knowledge is power." They've got that etched into one of the walls there. But they've actually got Bacon inside the kind of the inner sanctum. You go in the Library of Congress, there's, you know, this, if you think of like a temple, the outer court, where people, anybody can walk. And when you're walking through this, I mean, when you go into, if you've never been in the Library of Congress, anybody listening, if you've never been there, you should go there. It's like one of the most underpublished phenomena in our country that I've ever seen. You always see the Capitol building or the White House or whatever. I almost never see pictures of the Library of Congress. But if you could, with these huge columns and all these colorful zodiac designs and god and goddess images everywhere in there, all, you know, just a whole celebration to the ancient mysteries. If you were to take that building and submerge it in water, in the ocean, and leave it there for 50 years, and then scuba divers came across it half a century from now, they would swear they had found the lost city of Atlantis. That's what it looks like. It's like going into a whole other world. But Bacon's statue is actually in the innermost part, the room where they won't let you go with any cameras, and it just seems like they only allow a limited number of people in that inner room. You go in that inner room, and it's a circular shape, if I remember it correctly, and you look up and on the balcony. They have a whole host of famous literary figures like, you know, Herodotus and I think Shakespeare is up there and others, but one of them is Bacon, and he's one of the, you know, the great literary minds that are exalted in that room. But it's really just, I mean, I remember just sort of walking around, you know, in, kind of in awe of it because I'd never seen anything like this before, but it's full of all kinds of Masonic and Rosicrucian symbolism. In fact, one of the symbols that we show in Riddles.
Well, hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, as Chris is talking about, of course, if you go to the Library of Congress, it really is, of course, built as almost as if it were the lost Atlantis. There are certain parts of the Library of Congress where they will not allow people to go with a camera. Now, Chris was very fortunate. He was able to get in. And who do they have there in the most inner of this of rooms, which very, very few people are allowed to see? But they have statues of some of the great fighters of the past, including Francis Bacon, who wrote the book The New Atlantis, and he was a Rosicrucian. He was really the man who was responsible for the founding of America. His people came over here shortly after the Pilgrims arrived with the whole idea that they were going to take control of this country, and this was going to become the New Atlantis that was going to create this world empire and then create this one world government. You're never going to hear this described any place. They don't want you to know about it. You would not be allowed to go into that room in all probability in the Library of Congress with a camera. Chris was just, well, it was almost like divine intervention. He's able to get into there and take the pictures, which you'll see in his excellent DVD, which we carry, called Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Why is it important? Because there's all sorts of occult symbology there and things having to do with astrology. What does astrology have to do with the United States? Well, you have to understand there were two forces in America. One was the Christian, but the other was the occult, always hidden. We could never let the American people know what the real driving force was behind so many of the people in key positions in finance, or in industry, or in government. So go ahead, pick up the story there, Chris.
Oh, I was mentioning briefly some of the symbols and phrases and so on. inside the Library of Congress, and one of them that just looked, it looked pretty dreadful to me. It was a crucifix with what looked like a traditional Jesus figure there, but then there was like a double-headed black phoenix-looking bird behind it, and then a phrase in Latin that said, "In the shadow of thy wings, O Lord, keep us." And then, of course, you wonder, you know, whose wings, you know, who in the shadow of whose wings are we supposed to be kept? You've got this black double-headed phoenix up there that looks very ominous. And I did some research on it. It turns out that's a very, very arcane Rosicrucian symbol, and they would use that phrase. But when they're talking about the shadow of the wings, you do a history of it, and it takes you back to ancient Egypt when you would have the solar disk. And some people may remember this if you look at reliefs from ancient Egypt and so on, where you have a circle and then you have a pair of wings on either side, okay? And that's usually the circle, of course, symbolizes the sun god, the solar deity, and then the wings of the god on either side. And that's usually the symbol that is used to represent. But of course, it's the solar deity, it's the god of Egypt, Satan, that they're looking to. But then you've got a bunch of other phrases in there. One of them, one of the ones that I found to be the most disturbing was, at one point it's written that the true Shekinah, you know, the Shekinah glory of God, the glory that's shown in the temple when Solomon first completed the temple there in Jerusalem. But it says the true Shekinah is man. And that's one of the phrases that's written on the wall there in the Library of Congress, giving glory to man rather than God. And, of course, one of the things that we reveal it's the whole pattern of what's being communicated in the city of Washington, D.C., and it's the idea of man being exalted into godhood, which is, of course, the whole backbone of the New Age movement, the occult religions. It's everything it's the great magnum opus, as Manly Hall calls it in his book, Secret Teachings of All Ages. That's the great work, the perfected man that every Mason and Rosicrucian and arcane mystic is trying to achieve. But that's what's being communicated. Even all the zodiacs they have in the occult, they have this figure called the Zodiac Man. And it's the idea that you know, man who is below looks above to the stars and so on and taps into the powers of the zodiac by which he learns, you know, his destiny and learns his higher knowledge and so on, and through the zodiac can ascend into godhood, can ascend into this perfected state. And it's the whole hermetic maxim of as above, so below, and so on. That's why the zodiac is so important, and why they put them all over Washington, D.C.
And I think that's so important, ladies and gentlemen. They put them in the Dirksen building. They have one on every floor, a zodiac. These has to do with astrology. What does astrology have to do with a Christian nation? Absolutely nothing. It's the antithesis of Christianity. It is the worship, of course, of these ancient deities. And, of course, Christ came to set us free from the worship of the false gods. And yet they're honored all over Washington, D.C., and nobody will ever point it out. And they keep insisting we're a Christian nation. We were a Christian nation predominantly, although the occult was always here. Today we're not a Christian nation because the occult controls Washington, D.C., and they're so powerful that they're able to conceal their very existence. And that's why, of course, Chris's work is so vitally important, and why I can hardly wait to see this latest production, The Eye of the Phoenix.
Well, one of the figures that we talk about is somebody that most people are not aware of. I've found, you know, whenever I read books and so on the dollar bill, and that's a guy named Nicholas Rorick.
Right.
And Rorick is fascinating history, and the influence of this guy is incredible. And it's almost as though he's been removed from any history book post-1950.
Well, of course, actually, you know, Henry Wallace was a disciple of Rourke. Colonel House was a disciple of Rourke. And Manly P. Hall, of course, who's written so extensively on the occult, he himself was a Satanist. He is, was a disciple of Rourke, wasn't he?
You know, Manly, I believe so. Now, before saying yes to that, I'd have to do more investigation. Now, I will say this. When I was at PRS, the Philosophic Research Society in Los Angeles, which was founded by Manly Hall, I think, in 1934. In there, inside the library there, you walk in and they have, you know, these long reading tables, and on one of them, they have a little statuette.
Of Nicholas Rourke.
Of Nicholas Rourke. Right. And he's holding this little, you know, casket that supposedly has in it the foundation stone of America. Although that's a long story anyway. But yeah, that was, according to the president of PRS, a guy named Dr. Obadiah Harris, Mr. Hall was very close to Nicholas Rourke somehow or other. But they were contemporaries, and they had a lot of the same connections. And Rourke is the guy who is often credited with inspiring Wallace and, you know, via Wallace, FDR, to put the all-seeing eye and the great seal on the back of the dollar bill. He's credited with that, which is a key part of our discussion. And then to talk about, you know, what Rourke was into, how he influenced Wallace, and both of these guys were theosophists. They were members of this Theosophical Society founded by Madame H.B. Blavatsky. And, of course, Wallace had ambitions for the White House, but those were upset because he was part of the whole Dear Guru Letters scandal, where the media discovered a series of letters between him and Nicholas Rourke, where it was revealed that Rourke was his guru, his spiritual master, and so on. But of course, Rourke was a very mysterious character, you know, and believed to be a Russian mystic, a Rosicrucian, and so on, and had a lot of strange ideas. But he was highly revered as a painter and was considered by a lot of wealthy and influential people to be, you know, a master. I mean, they erected an entire building in New York called the Master Building. And the reason it's called the Master Building is because it's named for Master Rourke, the idea of an ascended spiritual master. It was because of his spirituality and his ability to communicate his ideas through his paintings and so on as an artist. And the Master Building was originally erected as a museum to house his artwork and so on. Today, decades later, you know, half a century later and so on, it's an apartment building. They've converted it, but they've maintained a lot of the history. And we actually went to New York with a camera, and we went with Buff Perry, who's connected with these guys, and he's also connected with the Rourke Museum there. And they continue with Nicholas Rourke's paintings, and we've got a lot of footage of his paintings and some of his history. A lot of people don't realize Rourke was, he won the Nobel Peace Prize at one point. He developed this whole peace program and a peace symbol with these three circles in sort of a triangular shape that was a big deal during FDR's administration and with Henry Wallace. And they signed this whole peace pact agreement.
Well, you know, I think we have to see God's hand in that, because most people don't know that Henry Wallace became the Vice President of the United States. And, of course, he was vice president. I've forgotten whether he was vice president. No, he was vice president in 1940, wasn't he? And then of course, he was replaced because the Dear Guru letters, why, of course, they didn't run him again as vice president. They brought in Harry Truman for vice president, which is rather unusual to, do away with the vice president. You know, he's not voted out. They just don't bother to renominate him. I believe God intervened at that time. I certainly would have hated when FDR died to have ended up with Henry Wallace, who was deeply involved in the occult, as the President of the United States.
Yeah, I think that would have been, especially with his close association.
With Rourke.
With Rourke and the Theosophical Society.
Right.
Because with the Theosophical Society, now you're into Madame Blavatsky and the worship of Lucifer outright.
Right.
Yeah, I think that would have been, an even darker chapter in American history. But Rourke, it is said of Rourke that his whole peace initiative was a key to the then establishment of the United Nations, and that a lot of the founding of the UN was the result of his influence.
But of course, there's always been an occult foundation for the United Nations, because it has to become the one center of the one world government. And of course, the ultimate goal is a one world government, a one world religion, a one world currency, a one world leader. And of course, the United Nations was to become the world government. And of course, I'm sure Rourke and every other occultist wants that. I mean, this is the common denominator. And the average American doesn't even understand that there are occultists out there who really do worship Lucifer, who has always, of course, wanted that world government, so eventually he could rule the world and replace God.
Well, that's it. And of course, they're using peace, as we read in the book of Daniel, that... Antichrist, by peace he would destroy many. That seems to be the vehicle. We're warned in the New Testament, as Paul says to the Thessalonians, when they shall say peace and safety, then shall destruction come upon them, as travail upon a woman with child, and so on. And certainly that cry of peace has been, the clarion call of the United Nations. But it's very interesting to see the movement and how pervasive the movement was during the FDR, Henry Wallace era, and what a key role that a guy like Nicholas Rourke played in this whole thing, and then influenced this, the placing of the Great Seal on the back of the dollar bill. And of course, Rourke was, that whole arena is festooned with Freemasons. Rourke's financier at the time, Louis Horch, was a Freemason, like a 32nd degree Mason. Then Wallace is a Freemason. FDR was a Freemason. Even when Wallace was replaced by Truman, Truman was a Freemason. So you've got Freemasons really running the show during FDR's New Deal administration and the placing of this very important symbol on the back of the dollar bill. And one of the things we talk about in Riddles and Stone that we're going to talk further about in Eye of the Phoenix is the relationship between FDR and Manly Hall, who was, again, Hall during this time. There's a new book that's been released on him called Master of the Mysteries, and it's a whole life story of Manly Hall and how he was a magician. He was like a traveling magician for years.
But I think he was not a phony, an illusion magician. He was a true magician, tapping into the supernatural.
That's certainly the impression that I got in terms of reading the book. But I didn't realize that he was, he would like go around, with the whole thing with the cape and the top hat, and the cane, the whole classical 20s and 30s style magician. But he did that for many years.
Now, what was the title of that book again?
It's called Master of the Mysteries. And the author's name is Louis Sahagun. S-A-H-A-G-U-N.
And is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? Is he one of the occultists or not?
The author?
Yes, uh-huh.
That I don't know.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, is the book readily available?
Oh, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Fine. Well, we'll have to see if we can get the author onto our program, whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. We'd certainly like to get his impression of one of the most important characters during the first half of the last century, a man who most Americans have never heard of. Chris, I think he died, 1991, didn't he, somewhere
in 1990.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
1990. But Manly Hall, he confirms something that we uncovered from Obadiah Harris, and that is that Hall had been financed by a wealthy baroness in California who had heard him speak and was very impressed and agreed to finance his research. And Hall went around the world collecting ancient manuscripts and books and so on, and reading about all the different occult groups throughout the world and what they believed. And it was from these writings that he developed his ideas about the secret destiny of America.
And that, of course, is the most important book he ever wrote, The Secret Destiny of America, which, incidentally, is available to Radio Liberty, although on a special list. We do not put these on a regular catalog, but for researchers, we do have them available. So go right ahead, Chris.
Well, it's a fascinating book. If anybody wants to learn more about Hall, there's a lot of original pictures and newspaper articles. I mean, Hall even had a weekly newspaper that he himself was he was the editor for. It was called The All-Seeing Eye, if you can believe that, edited by Manly P. Hall.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Chris, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. The hour has just flown by, but please go ahead. You've got 3 minutes.
Well, I hope that that.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us.
He and his family in great danger, and it's only the prayers of the people out there that are going to protect them as they protect my wife and myself and my family. And so we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty and for our staff and for my family, but pray for Chris as well. And incidentally, we do carry Chris's film, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, Riddles in Stone. We have his Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, and they're wonderful documentaries or DVDs, but they have tremendous amount of great information in them. Very, very professional. We actually have a DVD when Chris came here to talk to our group called The Atlantis Connection. We carry that. We produced it, and it's not the quality of his that he produces, but it's got all the information that you really need to know. We do carry the book, The Secret Destiny of America, written by Manly P. Hall. We carry the book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. Now, you have to go to those books on the special list. You have to just call and remember the names to order them. Fascinating reading, but only for those who understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. There really are secret satanic societies out there that would destroy all of humanity, and that's why there are firmly convinced they're planning on taking us into a nuclear war, because they've relished the carnage and the horror. These are the people behind the Boer War and the Spanish-American War and the First World War, where 21 million people died, and the Second World War, where almost 60 million people died. And I shudder to think what will happen when we have our nuclear war. And as we pointed out to you, if you go to my website at RadioLiberty.com and read my newsletter on the Sybil Edmonds story, it's January of 2008, you'll find out the United States is transferring nuclear technology to the Muslim world. We can't tell the American people that we're transferring nuclear technology intentionally and purposely to the Pakistanis, and we're allowing this to take place, because, of course, the last thing they want is the American people to know that we're encouraging the dissemination of nuclear technology in preparation for a coming terrible war, because there really are evil people out there, and they're working in our own government at the highest levels, and most of them tie right back into the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret society that's covered in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, a book that was suppressed for many years. You'll find it on pages 951 and 952, but you need to read the whole book to get the story of the secret society that created the organizations that rule the world today. And, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. It goes into how we brought the Chinese communists to power, how we've helped the Russian communists since the inception, and, of course, how we actually helped to finance the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War, and or we never tried to win. Our boys fought bravely, just as they're fighting bravely in Iraq and Afghanistan today, but not allowed to win the war. After all, as we pointed out many times, who are we fighting there in Afghanistan, where we're fighting the Taliban? Who funds the Taliban? Why, the Pakistani ISI. Who funds the Pakistani ISI? The Pakistani military. Who funds the Pakistani military? Why, your tax dollars, ladies and gentlemen. We've given them almost $10 billion since the September 11th attack. Understand nothing as it appears to be. The debate you saw this evening was magnificent. And certainly your heart went out, my heart went out to Sarah Palin, who I suspect, I fear, knows nothing about what we're talking about. But it's all staged, and they never talk about the really important issues, globalism, the move towards the one world government, the attack on Christianity by our Supreme Court, and the leaders of both political parties belong, and are members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and both John McCain and Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, have addressed the CFR and written articles for their publications. So remember, nothing as it appears to be. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in just a moment here. Remember, October 6, 2016. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish, and we're going to be talking about what's going on in Israel today. And, of course, Barry has a fascinating program. We've done this on our early morning program, and I was so pleased with it, I asked him to come on here to be our guest this evening as he brings us up to date on what's really going on in Israel and the surrounding areas. And, of course, most people really don't understand what's happening because, of course, you're dependent upon the controlled media. So, Barry, you pick up the story from there.
Sure. I mean, normally I talk about that debate tonight. I mean, just to sum it up so I don't have to do it twice, Sarah Palin had an earphone in her. She would take these long pauses before giving an answer. It was coming right through her earphone. There was tremendous preparation in making sure she got through it in one piece. And that was how it was done. She had someone actually talking through an earphone to her. Did you notice that, by the way?
No, I really didn't, Barry.
Oh, well, I guess I added something. If you can sit through it twice, you'll see this little a piece of trivia.
Okay, go right ahead.
All right, let's go on to what I do know, and that, of course, is Israel. Now, what we spoke about earlier was a concert that Paul McCartney gave in Israel a week ago, last Thursday. It was last Saturday night, so it was, 5 days ago. Paul McCartney arrived in Israel, and he gets off the plane. The first thing he does is go to Bethlehem, where he gives this tremendous announcement about how he's for peace. And it's a two-state solution, and he's giving both sides he is pro-peace from both points of view. That's what he said. Now, what he didn't know about Bethlehem is it was primarily a Christian town. It's now got less than 15% Christians because they've been harassed. Murdered and raped out of Bethlehem, and I guess no one told him this, but he goes on stage, and
I think it's important that how much are people paying to go to this Paul McCartney concert?
Well, my family bought cheap tickets. They were only 500 shekels, $150.
Each one, $150?
Yes.
$150 a ticket.
These
the best tickets, or they're more expensive tickets?
Right. Near the stage, you could pay up to $1,000.
All right. So he's got 50,000 people, some of them paying $150 for the cheap tickets, some people paying up to $1,000 for the good tickets. 50,000 people going to hear Paul McCartney, and what's he talking about?
Well, I mean, don't be too hard on the man. He had a tough divorce, and he's paying alimony. He needs the extra $10 million. That's what he earned approximately. Now, what McCartney did was give a little special concert for Israel, which friends of mine, some of them were very, very ticked off. Now, he gave the usual concert where 65% was Beatles songs, which were very well received, and 35% Wing songs, which were not well received. But he had a special section for the parted members of the Beatles, George Harrison and John Lennon. Now, in my opinion, there's a chance that both were actually knocked off. Lennon, of course, was killed by a programmed murderer named Mark David Chapman, who was, wow, what a history he had. Mark David Chapman he has no money, mind you, but he goes to Beirut in the summer of 1975. As the war breaks out, he is working for the Y. Then he goes to Laos where he helps refugee children for something called World Vision. World Vision, well, one of the directors of World Vision, of course, was John Hinckley Sr. His son tried to knock off President Reagan, and the reason was he wanted to impress Jodie Foster. And now that's a good reason to spend the rest of your days in prison. You want to impress Jodie Foster, but David Chapman had an even better excuse. He was more of the Sirhan breed. After he shot Lennon, he sat down on a curb and started reading Catcher in the Rye. And when he was arrested and they asked him why he shot Lennon, his answer was, "To prove that I was the real Catcher in the Rye." Now, how is that for an excuse to go to prison for the rest of your life? Now, before we dive into McCarthy, we just have to accept something. There is some way of programming a killer's mind using common cultural images. As I said, Jodie Foster and Colden Hallfield, Sarah Jane Moore, who almost, she tried to kill Gerald Ford, believed that she was the Claro girl. In case you want to know how to turn a person into a program killer, you use common cultural motifs, and somehow this reverberates in their mind and makes them kill. We just gotta, if you never heard this before, you have to look at these assassins, and you'll see this repeats itself over and over again. Now, Lennon was working for the New World Order, and by the time he was killed, I guess he had just had enough. His last album had no politics.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Shamish here. Well, Barry Shamish is talking about the murder of John Lennon. And John Lennon, of course, had been pushing the New World Order theme through his music, and he'd written about it. And he, of course, was internationally known, of course. But, of course, John Lennon had married Yoko Ono. And, of course, he'd suddenly, for one reason or another, had stopped writing about the New World Order. He wasn't pushing this. And suddenly he's gunned down by a young man who says he wants to prove to people that he's the Catcher in the Rye. That's why he shot John Lennon. That's as absurd as Jack Ruby telling the police that the reason he killed Lee Harvey Oswald is because he'd seen a billboard put up by the John Birchley Society that said impeach Earl Warren. That's why, of course, he killed Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, of course, none of these are the real reasons. But anyway, what about John Lennon? Because I thought your information on Lennon was so important, and especially it has to do with what Paul McCartney did when he was in Israel recently.
We're getting there right now. We need a little background every now and then, put things in perspective, that Lennon was not just an independent artist. He was controlled. Now, the control began when he met Yoko Ono, in 1968, and right afterwards, he started writing anthems, dreadful anthems, Power to the People, Right On, and Woman is the Nigger of the World, which we can argue whether it's more insulting to women or blacks, and God, the first song from his first solo album, God is a concept by which we measure our pain. That's what he wrote. Of course, to a religious person, this is patently false. To a religious person, God is a concept by which he measures his joy. But little did we know that Lennon, I didn't know anything about New World Order back then, 1971. Lennon's role was to demoralize the youth of the world by literally cutting God to shreds and destroying religion. That was part of the role he was given. Now, what Paul McCartney did is he had a special section to Harrison Lennon. And by the way, Harrison died very young. Harrison was the one who brought Eastern music to the West, and he may have been involved in this stuff. I have no proof of that. Lennon got knocked off, and the circumstances of his murder led me to assume that he was really tied up with business that he shouldn't have been tied up with. Now, he wrote one song. Now, just to add this, McCartney sang Give Peace a Chance. And frankly, I don't know how he remembered the words to Give Peace a Chance. And he certainly hated the song. But he told the audience, this song is for you. And then he stresses, and I mean you. And he got the entire crowd holding each other's arms and swaying to Give Peace a Chance. And by the way, a message like this, let him do it in Gaza. If he really wants to change people's, stay out of Israel and sing Give Peace a Chance in Ramallah. But no, he sang it in Tel Aviv, and people I know were plenty ticked off about that. They were being used. But of Lennon, I'm going to quote a song now. The evilest song ever written by anybody. And so you understand that Give Peace a Chance might have been one anthem, but there's an anthem that is sung at every peace rally in Israel. And I'm talking about every time, well, here's an example. When Yossi Belin signed the Geneva Accord, which essentially robbed Israel of its borders, at the end of the signing, in a ceremony hosted by Richard Dreyfuss, he sang this song. Shimon Peres, whenever he holds a peace rally, ends with this song. John Lennon wrote the ultimate New World Order anthem, and it's truly the wickedest song ever written. Now, I'm going to quote from the song right now. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. All right, so we start. There's no heaven and there's no hell. That is, there is no judgment. There's no punitive action, no matter what you do. So therefore, live for today. No one is ever going to punish you for what you do. Next. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. No religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Isn't that great? In this new world that John Lennon has conjured up, there can be no countries and no religions. And by the way, the no countries, we have done this. That is the exact philosophy of Shimon Peres and Yossi Belin. Destroy all countries and have them live in little trading blocks. They really, really are listening to Lennon's message. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. Lenin now has a Marxist vision where nobody has possessions or sentimental goods. And if you don't have possessions, you create a brotherhood of man. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. There you've got it. You've got yourself the New World Order in these simply dreadful, evil lyrics by John Lennon. Imagine essentially paints a world with no heaven or hell, that is without morality, with no countries, possessions, or religions. This is a dreadful vision of a robotic state without devotion to any higher good, This is the New World Order's theme song, and it is repeated in Israel constantly whenever the peace process has a meeting. This song, Imagine, I don't know if your radio station plays it, just tell them never to play it ever again. It is the really, it is a hypnotic hymn to a planet without religions, nations, possessions, and everyone living in peace. This is the New World Order vision. And I want you to know that Lenin belonged to a Masonic lodge in London. It was the Aleister Crowley Lodge.
Of course, Aleister Crowley was a Satanist. He was actually a 33rd degree Mason for many years before he was taken to the upper echelons, according to his biography. And there, of course, he became a Satanist in the upper echelons of Masonry. And there's not one Mason in 1,000 who's ever heard that. But, of course, it's what he wrote. Go ahead.
Oh, well, that's actually quite interesting. I'm going to add another fact in that case. John Lennon himself was not a man of peace. He was a very violent guy before he met Yoko Ono, and then he became the man of peace. He would, like, sit on a bed in a burlap sack and send acorns to world leaders for peace. But before that, he had a very violent past. The family of Stu Sutcliffe, the Beatles' original rhythm guitarist, to this day, say that John Lennon kicked Stu Sutcliffe in the head and caused him to die of a brain aneurysm. And then there's the issue with Brian Epstein, where a very famous biography of Lennon more than hints that Lennon may have had much to do with the death. Apparently he had a homosexual relationship with Brian Epstein. So we're not talking about a naturally peaceful man. But what he did join, again, we're back to this Aleister Crowley Masonic Lodge. Other members, two very famous members, were Mick Jagger and Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones. Now, they were just outright satanic. Now, next time you get a chance to listen to Sympathy for the Devil, certainly one of their best songs, for whatever that's worth, it's just a tremendous history of the influence of the Masons on world history. I won't read that song, but it takes you to St. Petersburg and the Russian Revolution, and, well, who killed the Kennedys? After all, it was you and me. Now, other than Sympathy for the Devil, we won't forget the Stones album at the same time as the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's. It was called Their Satanic Majesty's Request.
Let me just briefly mention, we carry a DVD called They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They show the album for Sgt. Pepper, the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper. But there you'll see, along with a number of pictures there, the picture of Aleister Crowley.
Right.
The Satanist. And most people don't, they just look at the album without ever look at the faces. There's Aleister Crowley, a Satanist. Why would they put that on their album, or their most famous album? Because, of course, they were, at least there was a satanic influence behind the Beatles. The DVD, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, 4-hour, 10-hour version, probably one of the most significant things we carry. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And talking about the Beatles, and John Lennon, and Paul McCartney, and we'll be right back. Go right ahead, Barry.
Well, if I may ask you, number one on this DVD,
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Architect for building the Twin Towers tell you?
Well, he was certainly out there, and I know that because I watched TV yesterday, and he said exactly what he told me on TV on an interview yesterday, that we had tested, we had built the World Trade Center to not fall if a plane smashed into it. Now, when they were designing it, it was in the late 60s, I believe, that the architects went to work, and the biggest plane that they could imagine hitting the World Trade Center was the Boeing 707, but they had that thing, they had models of a Boeing hitting the tower from every angle, and he told me this. He said, we made sure that a plane couldn't topple the building. He said to me, how come a plane toppled the building? He said, and this was not a... At the time, He was not a conspiratorial guy. He has become that, whether he's aware of it or not. He's become that. But he said to me, I don't see how a plane knocked it down. But then he gave me a piece of information, which I went out, I went on the air, and I explained something that apparently no one else had thought of at the time that I received this information. I actually was on Alex Jones' show, and he thought it was important enough to put on a show. He invited me on the show ever so briefly to explain what Aaron Swirsky said. He said to me, he said, they're telling us that the jet fuel melted the steel and that caused it to buckle and then expand and then come tumbling straight down. He said, that's the excuse they're giving us for the building collapsing straight. He said, both buildings actually collapsing straight down. He said, I want you to know that jet fuel, which I believe the figure he gave him was 1,700 degrees Celsius. He said, it doesn't matter because steel melts at 2,200 degrees Celsius. He said, jet fuel would not melt steel. He said, but even that doesn't bother me. He said, if the buildings had fallen just after the jets had hit, we could make a case for jet fuel weakening the steel. But he said the planes hit one at 9 in the morning and the building went down at 10:30. He said the jet fuel had been out for an hour and a half. He said maybe it burned for 10 minutes. And he said there was no more jet fuel after that. So how did jet fuel that had been non-ignited for an hour and a half melt the steel? And have you heard this, by the way?
Oh, I've heard all these explanations, but I don't think any of them are valid. Oh, well, the reason that the steel melted was because it didn't have the asbestos insulation. If that asbestos had been there, it would have been all right. And I think this is just all confusing. They're trying to get us thinking about all sorts of nonsensical things to conceal the truth.
Well, I spoke to a major architect of the World Trade Centers who lives in Israel. I'm going to repeat his name. Maybe you can find it on the internet afterwards. Aaron Swirsky, Swirsky, and look for his comments because I sent them out to the world that the jet fuel was out for 90 minutes. It couldn't have melted the steel. And this I got from Aaron Swirsky.
Well, even if it had melted the steel and the building had pancaked, as we're told it did, it would not, of course, have pulverized the cement. It takes something very powerful to pulverize cement, some sort of an explosive. If it had simply pancaked, there would have been big chunks of cement, and there weren't. Everything was destroyed. Why? It was almost as if somebody had blown everything up on every floor. And how could you possibly do that? I don't know. But I do know that they have not told us the truth. And I know that for one simple reason. They lied about the passport of one of the hijackers that supposedly was in the plane that hit the North Tower. And somehow that passport got out of his pocket and got out of the flaming inferno of the plane in the North Tower and got out of the flaming North Tower and then drifted down to the sidewalk a block and a half away without even any singe on it, was picked up and given to the police, and that's how we know that that hijacker was on that plane, because they found his passport in pristine condition, and he was carrying it, of course, when he got onto the plane. You tell me that happened, and then I'll believe the government story. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Shamish. Barry, go right on with the story.
Sure. I mean, we can end with 9/11. I was just kind of semi-patting myself on the back that one of my sources actually made it to American TV. First time I ever saw that, actually. Look, the fact remains, never in history, never have three skyscrapers all falling down within 5 hours of each other. That will never happen again. It just happened that morning, and I'm not a statistician, but I'd say the odds are probably in the trillions to one that actually happened. But let's go on to things that are very disturbing. And again, when I say disturbing, I feel them more than most people, because you do learn from the past, I do. Not everyone does, that's for sure. The days of the Rabin assassination are back in Israel right now. They are blaming the right wing. I don't mean just blame. I mean national media issues are the violence of the settlers. Now, you may not have heard of, as a matter of fact, you did hear of this, and it kind of took me off guard. There was an article in the New York Times by Isabel Kirshner that you had read, where suddenly everyone is blaming the violent settlers for their violent acts. And just so you know, the author, Isabel, I know her, she's very, very, very far left wing. I throw that in because that's another thing you, when you read the article, you weren't aware of. So there you go. I know her. And the article came from someone from the far left. Nonetheless, we discussed the beginnings of this, I guess, a week ago when we talked about the attack on a 9-year-old boy in the community of Yizahar, and the settlers go in to the nearby Arab town, and the soldiers let them shoot the town up. Without interfering, that was just one, and I assume, by the way, Shabak, Secret Service-related incident.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Barry Samish. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry's talking about what's going on over in Israel today, and of course the article I read in the New York Times is a couple of days ago, talking about the radical settlers, and of course their acts of violence. Now, these are the Jewish settlers who are living in Judea, Samaria, but the article talks about the violent settlers, the radical settlers, and they use these adjectives to condition your minds against them, and of course this is the technique that's used over and over again. We know how these techniques are used. We saw this in Ireland, where first you had the Irish Republican Army that was blowing up British schools and buses over in London, and of course killing people there in Northern Ireland, this radical Irish Republican Army. And then of course it comes out that the chief torturer and murderer for the Irish Republican Army is a member of British intelligence, and he's just playing a game, killing people with the full support of the British intelligence. And then it turns out the number two man in the Irish Republican Army that is such a threat to England is also a British agent. We saw the same thing in the Philippines, where, of course, you have an organization, a radical terrorist organization called Abu Sayyaf, and the number the man who helped create it, the co-creator, was a man named Edward Angeles. You can look it up on the Internet. Edward Angeles, he was a co-founder of this radical Muslim movement. He was actually a member of Philippine intelligence. We know in the United States that we have, of course, the Aryan movement here. Oh, my goodness, terrible threat to America, these radical right-wing extremist American radicals. And, of course, they were financed by the FBI. The militia movement here in the United States, two of the units there were actually FBI-funded. And, of course, when the Communist Party was active in the United States, a considerable portion of all the members of the communist cells were agents for the FBI. I know people who actually infiltrated the FBI, probably the communist movement for the FBI, but it was actually, of course, the movement was being at least funded in part by the Rockefeller, Carnegie, and Ford foundations, and But, of course, we can't let the American people know that. These people are the enemy, and that's why we have to look to the government to protect us from these radical people. And then, of course, we find that William Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, both, of course, were terrorists during the Vietnam War. One of them is a distinguished professor now. They were arrested, given a slap on the wrist after blowing up buildings and killing people. And, of course, they're also ardent supporters of a man named Barack Hussein Obama. Of course, that's another story. Go right ahead.
Yeah, well, as I said about this election, don't vote. It's rigged. There's no point in it. Both sides are, from the point of view of Israel, both sides are as bad as the other, and there's just, it's really hopeless. The situation that is actually hopeless. Look, I'm going to return to Yisrael, and but you brought up something that I should mention. I know when I'm doing a really good job is when I am absolutely slandered. It's called Israel National News, Arut Sheva. When there's a nutcase in there whose job is apparently to thoroughly slander me when I do something right. This week I am a Nazi. Actually wrote that I'm a Nazi, which the absurdity of that is there are no words for. There are just simply no words. But there it is on the national Israel National News that I'm a Nazi. And I wrote an article about the last year. It was Rosh Hashanah a few days ago, and I wrote what happened in the last year, and it was a very good article by the responses I've been getting. And I guess I have a sounding board. I can tell when I'm doing good work is when I'm being attacked by the right-wing media in Israel. And what can I say? I mean, I've been trying to expose one very big fact, that the right is thoroughly infiltrated. And, well, the right-wing Jews who let Gaza disappear of all its Jews just will never, ever learn the lesson that the people they trust to lead them are all placed in power by the government. Or, if they were in power previously, they are co-opted by the government. This week, and the government right-wing news service, Israel National News, I have been called a Nazi. Okay, so, as I said, I must be doing good work this week. Now, let's go back to the right-wing in Israel, who are now being called the most violent people in the country. Well, you know something is cooking. You know something very bad against them is cooking. Now, again, we spoke last week, I believe, about the attack on the Arab town by the residents of Yizhar after an Arab came into their past an army sentry, came into town and stabbed a 9-year-old boy 6 times. Well, within 4 or 5 days, the same terrorist, Yizhar is next to Nablus. Well, a terrorist was found next to Hebron, about 100 miles away, and he was shot dead. End of incident. We don't have to look for the terrorist anymore. We shot him dead at Hebron. And my friend Joel, who I mentioned, though he's asked me not to give his last name, he's very worried, and he's got good reason to be worried. He wrote me and he said, what's going on here? They don't give the name of the terrorist. They just announced they killed a terrorist without even saying who he is. He said, all of this stinks. It's the Shabak again. And by the way, there is a lot of writing. This, of course, is due directly to my expose of the Rabin assassination. Everyone knows that the latest wave is Shabak. And here is what the latest wave of repression against the Jews of Judea and Samaria and literally all religious Jews, is based on the attempted killing, and I use that word very loosely, okay, of Professor Sternhall. Professor Sternhall of the Hebrew University of Jerusalem is the most, well, we would use terms like radically left, pro-Arab. He's from the organization called Peace Now, a CIA-funded organization with, seriously, maybe 40 or 50 activists. They get the money anyways to stir things up. He is a leader of Peace Now, and a pipe bomb was found outside the door of his house in Jerusalem, and he just narrowly missed getting blown to smithereens, or so we're told. Now, as soon as he reports that there was an attempt on his life with a pipe bomb, and by the way, this pipe bomb was no more powerful than a firecracker. If the right, whoever they may be, really wanted to kill the guy, they would not use such a flimsy bomb as this one. But right away, all the talk about the terrorists, the Jewish terrorists, it all comes back in the media. They are punished. They can't go to Joseph's tomb anymore because their violent acts in Yizahar and the attempt on Professor Sternhall's life. They can't go to the tomb of Joseph the Patriot anymore. The army won't let them go there. And a reward is offered of 1,000,000 shekels to find the attempted murderer of Professor Sternhall. Who's got 1,000,000 shekels? Who would offer such a reward? And the answer is the Israeli Secret Service, the Shabak, knowing full well they'll never have to give a penny of it out because they arranged this phony assassination attempt. It was their operation. But what is going on now is that the entire political spectrum are all joining together to attack the Jews of Judea and Samaria. Now, I'm going to give you a quote it's from Ehud Olmert. It's from the Prime Minister of Israel. He calls a press conference. You know, with all the assassinations that have gone on in Israel, he has a press conference over Professor Sternhall this is a quote from him. There is a direct link between the Rabin assassination and the Sternhall attempted murder. The link is malice, violence, and lawlessness. The very acts that caused Yitzhak Rabin to be assassinated. Now, needless to say, that's a bunch of hooey. Okay, Rabin was assassinated because Shimon Peres wanted to become prime minister, and he wasn't playing ball anymore with the plans, the Oslo plans of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a loose cannon. He was getting stewed to the gills. He was dangerous. Peres saw an opportunity to walk right in, get rid of him, and become prime minister. That's why he was assassinated. And Olmert knows it. Now, just to give you a little itty-bitty story, Olmert was hosting a dinner for the Jerusalem Film Festival, naturally held on a Shabbat afternoon so there'd be no religious showing up there to ruin the affair. And I went there. Back then, I was a correspondent for Hollywood Reporter, and I brought my book, Who Murdered Rabin, and I gave it to Olmert, and Olmert took it, and he was very polite to me. He looked at the book, and he said, thank you. Olmert knows how Rabin was killed, and it isn't just because of my book. In his position, he is under tremendous threat, as any Israeli prime minister would be under tremendous threat. And they're willing to trade power and ego and being able to show off for a life of threatened assassination. This is the life of the Israeli prime minister. For him to take Sternhold's attempted assassination, the Shabak operation that almost killed Sternhold, and assume it was Jewish terrorists from the West Bank, and drawing a conclusion that this, like the Rabin assassination, means that there is real, real trouble afoot for Judea and Samaria and the Jews living there. Really serious trouble. They're stirring up the hatred again.
Well, I'm sure that's true, and because these techniques are always used to discredit one group, of course, and then to play one group against another.
Well, it's the government. Well, that's true enough, but the government ordered the operation, and again, look, our friend Aaron Klein wrote something about how the radical, the small group of radical settlers in the Palm Hotel in Gush Katif ruined the whole operation of saving Gush Katif. I've written about this over and over again. They weren't a small group of radical Jews. They were a group led by one Itamar Ben-Gavir, who was working for the Israeli police, and the whole idea was to stop, deliberately prevent the Jews from defending their homes. Now, Aaron made a mistake by just thinking that it's radical Jews. The radical Jews, so-called radical Jews, have been thoroughly infiltrated in Israel, and they're doing the work. They're doing the work for the government. That's what they're doing it for.
Well, but I'm sure they don't understand that. They don't realize that their leadership has been compromised. But we see this in America today with so many of the conservative groups, so many of the liberal groups. They're all infiltrated, and the average American, whether they be left or right, doesn't understand that their leadership has been compromised.
Absolutely not. The members, and there weren't all that many members, but the members, as a rule, they're young, idealistic kids who haven't got a clue that their leadership have been thoroughly compromised. In the case of Itamar Ben-Gvir and the Gaza Strip, the police arrested him before the demonstrations began, and then 2 days later, after the demonstrations against Arabs. It's a complicated story, and I won't go through the whole story, but in short, they got rid of their squealer and left his people to be arrested and held for months on end in some cases for disturbing the government's quiet planned evacuation of 10,000 Jews from their homes. You're right. The followers don't know that their leaders are working for the police or even worse, the security services. They don't understand that.
And, of course, the tragedy is, of course, if you want to accomplish anything, you've got to control the opposition. It's the oldest trick in the world, and they're doing that so effectively in Israel. I know that personally that they're doing it right here in the United States, having infiltrated many of the conservative organizations and movements and put their people into key positions. So go right ahead, Barry.
All right. Now, what I'm going to discuss... actually, I can do it at length or not at length. We have enough time, right?
Well, we only got about a minute and a half, right, before we go to the break, and then you'll have 3 minutes after that.
Oh, darn. All right. Well, Ami Meshulam, I knew him as an 11-year-old boy. His father, Rabbi Meshulam, Uzi Meshulam, was in jail for leading the Yemenite people against the Israeli government, who had kidnapped 4,500 babies in the early 50s, and as I have stated and proven, his contention was the majority were shipped to the United States to be used and to die in atomic experiments. And Shimon Peres, as usual, it's ridiculous. Anything grotesque, there's Peres. He was head of the Israeli Atomic Energy Commission.
Let me just come in for our listeners. Go up on the Internet and Google in Yemeni children kidnapped, sent to U.S., something of that sort. Yemeni children radiation experiments, and you'll find it's true. 4,500 Yemeni children. Google it in. Find out how could that have gone on, and I never would have heard of it.
Or get my books.
Right.
I cover this story thoroughly. I really related to these people, and they related to me. Rabbi Meshulam wanted me to be the spokesman for his group. Go to lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, write in my name, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, and you'll find,
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
We'll see that you can get them. And then, of course, there were they were Moroccan children. They were Sephardic Jewish children, 125,000 used for terrible, grotesque experiments over there in Israel. Of course, in the name of treating them for ringworm, they radiated them with massive amounts of radiation, destroyed their brains. You say, these things couldn't really go on, and yet the truth of the matter is, they could. They were the Sephardic children, over 100,000 of them. And the fact you've never heard these stories is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. If you'd like to get more information, let me suggest, of course, my talk on Nundare College Genocide. It's available on DVD. My talk on planned population control, available on DVD. My talk on population control, available on DVD. You can get my population control agenda monograph. It's available on our website, or if you get any of the other items you can ask for it, we'll send it to you free of charge. There are terrible things that have gone on that you have never heard of. If you'd like, of course, to get a copy of the UNESCO Courier of November 1991, where Jacques Cousteau, that great humanitarian, calls for the elimination of 350,000 people a day. 350,000 people a day. We have that. We'll make that available for you. You need to have this information. You need to show it to others. You need to let them know there are people out there who have a different world view. And, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to. You need to hear my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a forbidden secret that's been around for 5,000 years. And, of course, it tells you the secret to wealth and power. But, of course, if you tap into it, it will cost you your eternal soul. And then, of course, we also have a DVD called The Secret Knowledge. If you have not yet seen the DVDs, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. Let me recommend them to you, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, because it will explain to you not only what's happening in the music industry, but what's happening at a political level in our country today. And then if you haven't seen the DVD, The End Game by Alex Jones, going to the Bohemian Grove, it gets into, of course, the sexual perversion by the leaders of our country. And you'll see them there in their hoods and their candles and their capes, black or white capes. And there, of course, their occult ceremonies, the Bohemian Grove, just up north of San Francisco in Santa Rosa. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I do want to remind you about the all-day conference we're having on the 26th of September here at the Aptos East Cape Golf Course. Great time. I hope you can make it. You're going to have reservations. We're serving lunch. Starts at 8 o'clock in the morning when the door is open, and we'll go to 5:30 in the afternoon. People are coming from all over the world. Looks like we're going to have a great turnout. And if you can make it, well, I would love to have you. You need to get reservations, though, not only for that, but, of course, for a motel. We'll try to get to the most economical motel to go with it. I think we still have a block of rooms. No, that well, you may be able to get the special rate, but you're going to have to make your reservations now. Again, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, our all-day seminar, the 26th of October, it's a Sunday. It's going to be a great program. Dr. Russell Blaylock will be there. Joanna Michelson, who was a medium, will be there talking about the occult. Patrick Wood, talking about what's happening financially and what you're going to have to do to survive in times like these. So give us a call if you can come. Try to encourage others to come. And then, of course, please go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and listen to our programs, and then encourage others to listen as well. And watch our DVDs and listen to our programs and read our newsletters, and pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.